We're a hospitality family, and in the next 10 years, we would like to own a home that could welcome at least 20 people around a dinner table. Or we may be a international missions family, and we would like to create a plan where we could stop working for 18 months when we turn 35 and take our family abroad. Who knows? I can't tell you what the Lord has designed you for. All I can tell you is He didn't design you to put all your money on autopilot and do what everyone else is doing. He designed you for something unique.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
My question is for somebody who is a comer in to the Abe's Wallet world. How do you start managing your money? Do you want to answer that in an open air kind of way? Or can I give you like a case study and you walk the case study through?
Let's address this question of how would you get started with a case study?
Okay. All right. Let's say Trent. There's no truer American city than Indianapolis. Let's say that Trent lives in Indianapolis. He's 25 years old. Been married a year and a half. Together, he and his wife have $50,000 in student debt.
Oh.
When they kind of consider what did we spend last month, it was maybe a couple of hundred dollars more than they brought in. Trent makes $60,000 a year. And here's the big news. They just found out they're pregnant. So Trent is scrambling. He's looking for a scratch piece of paper. Is there a calculator somewhere? I don't really have a plan. Currently, they're renting a two-bedroom apartment for $1,700 a month, and that seems like a nice enough thing. But what do we do? How are we supposed to start? What does managing your money look like for Trent and Bethany?
Is Bethany employed?
Bethany is currently employed, but we'd like for her to end up not employed.
How much does she make?
She's making $45,000 a year.
Okay. Well, my first thought, these two well-intentioned American heartlanders are, you said they're spending more than they're making. So right now they're bringing in $105,000 a year. And they're spending $20,400 on rent. That's okay. But if Bethany's planning on staying home with this baby, it suddenly becomes a lot less okay.
That's why we think we need to have some kind of plan in place.
The first thing that I would tell these people is, it's honestly, Stephen, here's a little secret. It's the first thing that I would tell somebody who came and said, you know, I'm making $1 million a year and I'm ready to start running my hull and my dough like a biblical boss. It's the same first step for everyone. And I'm going to sound like a broken record to those who've been listening to us for a long time. But first, you have to measure what's coming in and what's going out in reality, which means you're going to need a budget. Before you think even too hard about debt, before you think too hard about financial savings goals, any of that stuff, it takes a good 2 to 3 months to get a really accurate picture of what does it cost to run this family for a month. I would probably point them to an app like Monarch Money and say, go get that, or there's some others, you need a budget as one. Go pick one. Plug all your spending accounts into it, and all the transaction in or out will be recorded. And all you have to do, it's going to even make a guess at what types of transactions those are. It'll say, oh, I see you went to Albertson. I think that's probably groceries. So at the end of a couple months, we can look, and even if you've done almost no work, like categorizing, we're still going to have a total, this is how much came in and this is how much went out. And that's going to be a very helpful starting point to get young Trent to a spot where he can at least go, well, this is what I'm dealing with, and this is kind of what I'm spending. I make $60,000 a year, and I spend $4,000 a year on lattes. Well, that doesn't seem very reasonable. There's always something that comes at that first time you look reality in the face and see what you're spending. There's going to be a few categories where you go, wow, I'm spending a lot there and I don't really want to or need to be happy. There might be a few categories. Giving is one that we see a lot where people go, we just have a heart to be generous And then you do your budget, you step back and you go, huh, we give about 0.25% of our income to generosity efforts. Well, okay, there might be places in that sense where not enough is going out and something that's really important to the family. But that's step one, is don't even try to muscle your way into a budget that you think is responsible and right. Just step one, Trent, go connect some accounts, let them run for a couple months, and then let's take a look at the what's coming in and what's going out.
When you say budget over the next 3 months, you mean just observe my spending habits and see what's happening. I really don't even know what happens to the money until we get to the next month and I see the bills and I go, well, that's interesting. And then we kind of criticize each other a little bit, and then that we wait until the next month to do that again.
Yeah. A lot of people hear the word budget and they think, I'm going to be shamed for my spending habit. And that's not the point. That's not what we're doing. We're saying we have to start with reality. It's like if we were trying to get healthy, but we refused to think about the nutritional value of what we were eating and how much. And we just said, I am going to get healthy by intending to eat vegetables, fruits, and lean proteins. And we said, okay, that sounds great. Here, we've got a plan. You've got your healthy food. And then 3 months later, you come back and you're like, I am not healthy. And I say, well, what have you been eating? And you said, well, I still intend to eat vegetables and fruits and lean proteins, but I don't know what I actually ate. I didn't track it. I mean, I can remember quite a few times where I had a funnel cake and a McDonald's Big Mac, but you know, I'm still intending from here forward to eat right. I would much rather us say, what if we just didn't eat one Big Mac that you're eating now a week and saw, did that improve health? So that's where I start, and I start there, whether we're talking to Trent or whether we're talking to somebody that, you know, a professional athlete making $5 million a year.
Trent understands this analogy. Trent played small college baseball. Trent cares about protein intake. Trent takes some creatine. And one of the things that he doesn't want you to do with your fancy budget is take away the sweet gym that Trent goes to, because they have both a dry sauna as well as a steam room, and they got that plunge thing. Oh. And when he's done doing all his reps of his different shapes of his chest workout, he likes to go into those plunge pools and he feels vibrant. Maybe that's one of the reasons that the baby came along. So, you know, don't take that away from him. That's okay. What he's saying.
Well, the cool thing is, once we get a picture of what's actually happening, that's when we can start to make some actual tweaks that just say, let's do some planning. And I'd say that if all you do is take a look at reality and then create a few goals or plans around what you would like to see happen. So in this case, we're going to have to make one real big and very impactful decision very soon, which is Bethany, is that her name?
Yeah.
Is she going to stay home with this baby? Because if so, we need to craft a budget where $60,000 of income, maybe we're locked into a 2-year lease on that 2-bedroom apartment. That's going to have to fund that lease plus all the need. And if Bethany's not going to be staying at home, then we need to find a childcare solution that we can afford. Maybe while we're locked into this lease, maybe we're not locked, maybe we're months to month, and we can go, actually, there are apartments available for less. But this is the phase where we start to look at those pieces of, okay, do we have a car payment, Trent?
Yeah, Trent has a car payment. They both have car payments.
Oh, no. What kind of cars are we driving?
Bethany is driving a Civic. That's reasonable, but Trent feels good about his job. The prospects seem good. They talk about upward mobility, et cetera. And he's driving a Volkswagen Touareg at the moment, and he wants to move up from there.
What are we paying a month on these two cars, Steve?
All told, it's $950 a month.
Okay.
Trent wants to know if he is month to month. And they thought that was kind of responsible to not sign a new lease. So is he going to be better off to like buy a house? Is that one of the things that comes with you have a baby and you start a family? You got to go buy a house?
Here's the thing. If Trent can track his expenses, then Trent will be able to, if you do this well, create a spending plan that says, this is where I'm putting my money, that there has to be some left over. Like, I want some wiggle room in that plan, because as long as there's no wiggle room, this is how much we spend and this is how much we bring in, then what are we talking about right now? We're not making any plans. We don't have any extra to do something with. We're not funding the future. We're certainly not putting a down payment on a house. We could go swap out the Touareg for a BMW in a couple years, but we're still going to be breaking even at the end of the month. So maybe you said right now we're doing worse than break even. It would be a win for this young couple to be breaking even. But are they breaking even on today's income? Because that's a problem if Bethany would like to stay home.
Trent feels confident that if he tried, we could more than break even next month. It just wasn't a big deal last month. And he just happened to look at his numbers because he knew this call was coming up. And okay, they were a little over last month, but they're okay. They've got a good income. Trent is a little offended at the insinuation. He couldn't have more left over at the end of the month. Obviously, he could.
Okay, since I'm kind of talking to Trent's agent right now, what kind of cash do we have on hand at the moment?
Trent tries to have between $3,000 and $5,000 in the checking account at any given time, but he feels the freedom to spend the paycheck.
I'm going to get real Dave Ramsey on Trent as a step one. It sounds like we've already got that I can cover an immediate emergency. So high five, Trent. You're ahead of the average American who cannot cover a $1,500 emergency. But I want, as kind of a first goal, after we start tracking what's coming in and going out, I want Trent to have a plan to get to that what is going out number times 6 in cash in a high yield savings account. Before we think about new house,
Trent is nonplussed at this advice.
Dude, here's the thing. Not only are we moving to, a new life, which involves some new expenses, however we end up funding that, we also still have the risk of job loss. And that
Trent is offended at the very suggestion that he might lose his job.
Trent might lose his job. I'm just going to tell you that. Everyone might lose their job. Even entrepreneurs like you and I could wake up and find that we've done a horribly boring podcast and 70% of our clients have left and, we have to rebuild. So those are always a possibility. Let's get just brass tacks here. Step one, we were trying to measure what's going in, what's coming out. Step two, we said, let's create a plan to fund 6 months of that and stick it somewhere like an Ally bank account or an American Express high yield, wherever you want, where it's going to grow at a high-ish rate, especially right now, and forget that it exists. This is not your, hey, we found a really good deal on a used new vehicle, so let's use it. This is for true, we have no income or one of those two incomes that we were counting on is gone. Let's supplement while we get out of there and pound the pavement and try to replace that. We're going to need something to bridge the gap. My $3,000 to $5,000 is not going to get me very far when the faucet gets completely shut off. So that's step two, is let's protect what we've already got by building a real emergency fund and not just a emergency expense padding. I think it's very easy to say, I want to build multi-generational wealth and I want to be a family team on mission. And some of these things that I'm just going to say it, our listeners, they really like to say those things, but they sometimes get bored with the kind of plain Jane first steps, which involve tracking your spending, building a sufficient emergency fund. And one thing that I'm a little nervous about is you said Trent is 25 and I have noticed in my hiring, in my discipling, in just my general conversations with the 25-year-olds of the world, there's a little bit of impatience that has crept in that maybe I didn't hear in the stories I got told by my grandpa about how you were going to slug it out, you were going to live on less than you earned, and when you turned 40, then you were going to buy a family car, and that was going to be a big deal. What I see now is we've created some financial instruments that allows to accelerate all of that stuff to right now. We've also developed a culture. I was thinking, my wife is a physician, and I was thinking about medical residency. It used to just be table stakes that for 3 to 7 years, you were going to work 120 hours a week, and it was just going to be brutal. Well, there's laws now that say you can't work more than 80, and at certain times you can't work more than 60 hours. So even in the most intense sort of training moments of a young person's life, the whole culture has shifted a bit to say, well, we need to take it easy. We need to have some work-life balance. And I think that Trent, if he's poking around these Abrahamic parts, probably he's thinking, well, I want to be a family leader. I want to be a father that's intentional with my kids and have lots of time for them. When the truth is, Trent, we're making 60 grand. I know you feel good about that. You need to crank that income up, and the time to do it is between now and probably about when you turn 30. I want to see some exponential growth in that income, which is going to mean, Trent, we're going to get rid of the Touareg, and we're going to think of yourself as a pickup truck that has nothing in the back right now. And we're about to drop a baby in the back of that pickup truck, and it's going to start having some weight in it. And I need you to get ready to pull some weight that you haven't been pulling.
You are intentionally provoking Trent. You are besmirching his generation. You are questioning his work ethic. Trent is so provoked that Trent is remembering some of his anger management skills that he's having to walk through. Trent is counting in his head right now as you are saying that he can't increase his income. Trent will increase his income, and Trent will prove you and the haters wrong.
Okay. I'm excited to see it, Trent, but that's kind of where I'm going to start to focus. You're making some good choices a little. Bethany staying home, I think that's a great goal. Let's make it happen. But now we're at 60 grand and we're spending a third of that right off the top before taxes on rent. There are cities in the U.S. where you kind of have to spend a third of your income on rent. If you live in San Francisco for whatever reason, or New York City for whatever reason, you might have to spend a third of your income on rent. You don't have to if you live in the Midwest. Like, nowhere in the Midwest do you have to spend 33% of your income on rent. So scale back a little bit. And best case scenario, what are we left with? A couple $100 a month of slush? That's not going to get us where we're trying to go. And so that's why I really focus at this stage on increasing income.
Trent would like to perish the thought of having to live in Wilbur, Indiana, or a Bogstown, Indiana, to drive into Indianapolis for work. He likes where he is, but he's listening because he imagines little Adele. That's what he imagined his new baby's name is, Adele. And he's willing to make sacrifices on behalf of baby Adele. So he's listening, and he has every intention of increasing the income over the next few years.
Let's just start to kind of fast forward and paint Trent a picture of what his life looks like. Because right now, as much as it can be exciting to get into personal finance and Abraham's wallet and run your dough like a biblical boss, you're going to have to show us some diligence in those first two steps before you really have the right to think about steps 5, 6, 7, and 8. If I had to just lay it out, I would say track what's happening, spending an income for a few months, 2 to 3. Then create a budget that is in the black, meaning all the spendings equal less than all the earnings. Use the extra first to build an emergency fund. When that emergency fund reaches about 6 months of what it costs to run your family, now we're ready to move on to the next step.
Trent is getting his head around what you're saying. It's not that exciting, but it's exciting to think of where we're going, which leads me to this question. At this stage of the game, do you think are there any specific goals that you think Trent should have? Like, have $100,000 waiting for you when you're 65. Anything like that that should be in Trent's mind?
Yeah, I think once Trent got to the stage that we were talking about, which would involve the I'm pretty disciplined. I've learned to even say no to things that don't fit into my plans for my money. And I've learned to say yes to things that do. And I've built a little bit of a pad, a kind of a protective nest egg. And I've even started to be able to say, well, when I have extra now, I can tell you whether it should go to things like paying down debt or investing for the future. At that point, Trent is probably ready to create a basic financial plan. And that would involve, he could do this himself, where he said, this is kind of how I see my career going. I can kind of make an estimate of income over time. I can also say, well, we're going to retire in Indianapolis, or maybe we're going to retire in Key West, and those are going to have different costs. Or maybe we're not going to retire at all. We're going to have 8 children. We're going to live with those kids and just keep working until we're done. That sounds a little more like he'd been hanging around with us for a while. But whatever he does, those are going to have a hugely different costs. Trent's family, kind of as a part of that financial plan, if I was advising this fella, I would tell him, maybe we need to go look at what is the unique vision you have for your family. Because, again, I'm sorry, our faithful listeners, that you hear us say this almost every week, but without a vision for what you're trying to do, and without even stepping back and looking at your family and going, what are the unique things about this combination of people? What might the Lord have been intending when he put us together? Then you're going to just be stuck with kind of the generic money magazine, like, oh, here's why you need to have $1 million to retire. Well, some people don't, and other people need a whole lot more than that. And other people would laugh at the whole definition that they're using and say, that's not what we want at all. So I would encourage him to go to abrahamswallet.com, download a goals summit, and try that exercise with his wife. I'm going to back up. I'm going to retrade on myself and say, before you even worry too much about the budgeting stuff, maybe you're going to try to do that, but you don't have to wait 3 months to go to abrahamswallet.com, click on the goals summit guide and download a copy of that. And you guys could do that now that you're expecting a baby and say, sometime before this baby comes, we're going to do a goals summit and just see what kind of things do we want to have happening in the family. And that will be the data that then informs the inputs to the financial plan. We're a hospitality family, and we're going to target at in the next 10 years, we would like to own a home that could welcome at least 20 people around a dinner table. Or we may be a international missions family, and we would like to create a plan where we could stop working for 18 months when we turn 35 and take our family abroad. Who knows? But I can't tell you, Trent, what the Lord has designed you for. All I can tell you is he didn't design you to put all your money on autopilot and do what everyone else is doing. He designed you for something unique. So let's make a plan, and you get the right to start actually making that plan and not just having it be a LARPing exercise by doing some of these first steps. You just need to face reality, track your money, create a sort of cushion so that you're able to say, I have shown discipline over time with my money. And then you can proceed to the really fun stuff, which is, I would say, where Abraham's Wallet almost starts. And that's why we're recording this, because sometimes we probably start with an assumption that folks have already done A, B, C, and D and are ready for the fun stuff.
Trent is very interested in this.
Can I just give Trent a couple pointers there?
Yeah, sure.
If he's the money guy, I mean, Trent, come on, what are we doing with the vehicles and the rent? But if he's the money guy, a lot of times when he approaches the non-money partner in the marriage, that partner's off, not always, sometimes it's the wife that's the money person, but a lot of times the husband's the money person. The wife goes, why are we talking about budgeting? Is it because you're angry that I've spent too much? Part of that conversation, Trent, even now when you're spending more than you're making, part of that conversation is I would like us to be intentional with our money, and I want to resource you to do the things that the Lord has intended for you to do. And I've noticed that we've been spending all our money on lattes and car payments, but you love to decorate our two-bedroom apartment. And I've never once said, how much money do you need to do a great job there? Or you love to prepare meals for our friends, and we just always make tacos when they come over because we're broke on the grocery budget. I'm just kidding. You don't have a grocery budget. You haven't been tracking that.
But Trent loves a good taco.
Nothing wrong with tacos, but Bethany, she wants to make a beef Wellington once in a while. And so that tends to really change the nature of the budget conversation from, I guess you're trying to tell me to spend less, to we're actually going to start pointing our money at the places where we feel calling. That sounds way better than, can we just spend less and less and less, which sounds awful and oppressive and you won't stick with it.
Trent's got another question.
Okay.
When he imagines baby Adele, is he supposed to be doing something with his money right now with regards to this child that's coming in 6 months?
I like to quote my favorite Delta pilot and say, you need to put on your own oxygen mask before you put the mask on the small child in the seat next to you. And what that means is there are expenses for sure on the horizon. Adele, we're hoping that she's going to someday meet an awesome guy who's going to be even better than you are, Trent, at husbanding and all the cool stuff. And you're going to want to throw a huge party. But we're not saving for a wedding now because we haven't even thought about how we're going to buy groceries once we get past the age where we're earning money. We're also not even probably saving for education yet. We might be having conversations as a part of that planning where Bethany says, you know, I've always thought I'd like to try homeschooling. Oh, well, maybe Bethany's going to need a little bit of education, or we're going to send her on a trip to hang out with a homeschool family in this year or 9 months before baby comes, because that seems like probably the only time she's going to have where she has that level of freedom. Well, we're going to need some money for that, so we'll plan for it. But what we're not going to do is start saving $1,000 a month into a 529 plan to pay for college when we haven't even thought about our own retirement. At this point, we're forecasting into the future. He's kind of wisened up a little bit. He's spending less than he's making. And he's realized, you know, if I just put 4% of my paycheck into my company's 401k plan, they'll match it. So he's doing that. But we're not even at the place yet where we feel like our parachute has been packed and we can start thinking about how we're going to care for more than just our own needs. I'm going to say one more thing about this, though. Whenever there's a big change coming up and you know it's going to happen before it happens, so this could be a new child in the family. This could be, well, we are going to need a bigger apartment. Let's say we're looking a few years down the line and Trent's now got two kids and the two bedroom or three kids, the two bedroom apartment doesn't work anymore. One thing I love to do is I tell people, once you've got the skill of budgeting for now, we can do that before the budget forces you to change it. Let's say Bethany decides, you know, I think I'm going to work another 2 years before I go to full-time staying in the home. So we're going to spend $1,000 a month on childcare, or $2,000 a month on childcare. Let's try living in that budget before it happens. And that has all sorts of great downstream effects. One, let's say you can do that 3 months before you start needing to pay for childcare. Well, if it's $2,000 a month, now we have $6,000. What do we want to use that for? Well, we could fund a Roth IRA for one of us for the year, or we can sort of get ahead on that retirement thing. We could start saving for a down payment on a home because we actually don't want to rent a three-bedroom apartment. We want to buy a small house. All sorts of things we can do. And once we get to the time where we're having to pay for childcare, it's not this mad dash to figure out how the heck are we going to do it. We've been practicing it. So make the changes to your budget before your budget forces you to make the changes. And usually good things will happen.
Good tip. Trent feels he has more than enough to proceed from here.
Well, I'm glad that Trent feels equipped for his next steps. Can I kick you the guy that I'm maybe even more interested in helping than young Trent? There is a guy that seems to come sniffing around the doorstep of Abraham's wallet all the time.
Case study number two?
Yeah, we could call it that. And he, you know, he's kind of gotten the idea. He's gone through Dave Ramsey's baby steps, so he's not really wondering if he should keep a budget. He knows that he should keep a budget. Some months he does it really well, and other months he needs a little grace there. But for the most part, we're tracking spending. We've even got an emergency fund because he learned that from his church's Financial Peace University class, and that was a good thing for him. But now he's starting to say, okay, I'm doing my 401k savings. It looks like I might be on track for general retirement so that I basically have what I need to pay for my bills until I die, me and my wife. And we've got a couple small children. It seems like we can afford the things we need for them. We get to take a small vacation every year, but we're not anywhere close to this thought of multi-generational wealth. That feels like the domain of somebody who's sold a tech company or inherited $10 million.
Right.
So you guys talk about multi-generational wealth. What should we be thinking about that? Is that just not for us and we are supposed to be faithful little workers and die with roughly $0? That's the guy that I'm interested in seeing if we can plug into the Abrahamic
awesome
track
well,
lead to multi-generational wealth.
Let's play with that idea. So this guy walks up to you and he says, how do I get on track? What are the first things that come to mind for you?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is something we already talked about with Trent, which is, have you ever actually stepped back and surveyed what are the unique giftings between you and your wife? Because if you haven't done that, you know, we have the Goals Summit. And the Goal Summit is great as a tool for figuring out what's working, what's not working, and what are we trying to do differently, start doing, etc. in our family. What has God done in our family in the past year? What the Goal Summit will not do for you that our family vision course, and this is not an advertisement for that, we'll put a link in the show notes to the family vision course. I don't know, what's the normal cost on that sucker, Steve? Let's make it real cheap for these people.
Oh, the normal cost, I think, was like $250.
Okay. We'll put a code in the notes next to it that'll make it very, very affordable. Whatever you want, Steve. You're the executive director.
Okay. Let me hear more about this case study number two, and I'll think about the price that seems right for him.
Depends on good idea. So what creating an actual family vision statement will do for you that just setting goals, no matter how noble they are, won't do for you, is it helps you say, what are we uniquely cut out for? And what is our corner of God's kingdom on earth? How can we really fulfill that? And that's a critical first step to saying, now let's start doing those things and start building a culture inside of our home that we are just expecting that our kids are going to grow up in something we didn't grow up in. So we're sort of trying to figure it out. Let's say that you're what's an example of a unique family vision that we deal with from time to time, Steve?
We sometimes have families that would say they feel that their whole ethic, their whole thing is we want to be reaching out to lost people in our neighborhoods and network. So sometimes they want their home to be a place of hospitality. Sometimes they want to put all of their efforts in going out, like not as much having people in, but we want to be involved in like social clubs, basically, places where they meet people, where they can invest in other people.
Great example. Let's say that you and your wife figured out that was a unique gifting and calling, and it was part of the family vision that you expected to see God doing things a lot longer than just while you two are young and vibrant, but for generations to come. You're sort of figuring that out as you go, but your kids are going to grow up in that. So you're creating a culture, and that is super powerful. This is true of money, for sure. People that grow up in a culture where people handled money well are just naturally, there's things they don't have to learn because it's in their veins. They understand. We don't spend money that we don't have. And this can go good or bad. There's people that grow up in families where everybody's greedy and they have to sort of cut that out of their flesh before they're really able to be effective with money. But there's other families where they're like, we just swam in the water as kids where mom and dad were always looking at things going, I bet that's a good investment that will multiply for us and we're going to do it. And they just understood it so that when they grew up, they were ready. This is how family vision works. You might be the first one figuring it out. And, you know, we're going to lay our hands on the kids and bless them to outpace us in everything that the Lord has called our family to. And that's great, but it also just happens when we create a culture and start to try to do something. The kids go, well, that was what we grew up with. So we know how to do it and we can go further.
Absolutely.
Why does that matter? Because once we have the family vision statement, then we can start figuring out why might the Lord give us money? We talk about five capitals all the time. Money is the least important one, but it's often one that we can trade for the other capitals. I'm thinking of a family that I know that's probably listening to this episode. They have shared with me their vision. It's got a lot to do with exactly what you said about reaching the lost in the neighborhood. They're not dealing with multi-generational wealth, but they're stewarding faithfully what they've got. And they said, one thing we can certainly afford right now is to open our garage on Saturdays, buy a fancy espresso machine, coffee shop set up, and run a free neighborhood coffee shop and just welcome people in.
Oh,
and,
wow.
So Saturdays, the garage goes up and it's the free coffee shop and people are out walking their dogs and they go, hey, there's free coffees in here and we're excited. We're into coffee. We're starting to learn about coffee. We get a kick out of that. We get a kick out of service with our kids. And now their kids are growing up in a home where they go, well, on Saturdays, we open the garage door and see what neighbors come wandering into our house.
That's really sweet.
My guess is those kids will get their hands on some money someday and they will have been brought up in this and they will go, I wonder how we're supposed to reach out and expand the impact of this family vision.
Of course they will.
And it's going to be, it's not to poo-poo Saturday garage coffee shop, but it's going to be a whole lot bigger because they're going to have seen it and the faithfulness with both finances and stewarding the family vision means that, well, we already know how to do that. That's easy. We've grown up in that welcoming the neighbors thing. We think we can impact a whole 6-block radius, or we could maybe even impact a city with some of the things we're doing. It's like the biblical picture of eldership. You start with being able to manage yourself. And then you get entrusted maybe with a wife and then with children. And then once you've demonstrated success there, the Lord says, I'm going to hand you a chunk of people from the local church and see if you can shepherd them. I think the Lord works that way with money. I think he works that way with all the capitals. And once we start to figure out what the vision is and the unique giftings, then we can deploy money in a way that God goes, yep, that's exactly what I was hoping you would do. And you look like a trustworthy vessel for me to put some more resources in your hands. And that's kind of, sometimes that looks like immense multi-generational wealth in short order. And sometimes it looks like faithfulness that leads to expanded capitals in all sorts of areas. And it takes 6 generations to build up. But I do think it looks like increase over time. And I think that's true even for the person who never once has more than $1,000 of extra money at the end of the month, but they've just diligently pointed it into the places where the Lord has called their family.
Your guy, your case study number 2, does he have a name? Armando?
I was going to call him Walter. I know he has a young son named Larry, that's for sure.
Okay.
You know, just a quick shout out. I said this on our Volley channel, but we have our little video channel for those who support the podcast. And one of our listeners, it's called it's Abraham's Homeland. But yeah. One of our listeners had a baby recently and she and her husband named him Larry. And Larry's one of the cutest babies I've ever seen. So I
said
it. I
don't know that I've heard of a baby Larry in 25 years.
Totally. I'm saying all these people that want unique names are not doing what they ought to do, which is go, what is nobody named right now? Because like,
yeah, just go back into history. There's all these names. They're sitting right there. Nobody's using them.
That can bite you in the rear end, though, because like my wife is Amelia. There was no Amelias when she was little. And now it's like a top five girl's name.
Oh, really?
I'm thinking you go with names that are recently out of favor. And then you've got 100 years before they come back. So if you have a girl and you name her Jennifer right now.
There you go.
I think she's safe.
Yeah, right,
unique.
Right.
Unique.
Okay. Okay, you wanted to name him Walter, which is I've never heard of a baby Walter in 40 years.
I know one baby Walter right now, so that's
okay.
Maybe.
All right. So Walter, you say that he's more or less getting his head around the technical stuff of money, and he doesn't understand the sort of spiritual side of vision. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think he wants to follow Jesus. He's probably hung around some sort of church scene. He was amenable enough to us to turn this episode on, and he made it
through Trent.
Yeah, which was some knee deep muck he had to sort through. But
I'm not gonna tell Trent you said that. Don't worry about it.
But yeah, I think that his vision for money when it comes to what God wants me to do with it has probably been limited to, well, if you were really, really spiritual and holy, you would give it to us. Says the preacher man.
Yeah, boo on that.
All we're doing is trying to hand Walter some tools. That's why we exist. We want to hand Walter some tools so that he could go, it seems like the Lord has entrusted me with some things, some resources. Some of them are financial. Some of them are humans. I have a wife. I have these resources. Why did he do that? And what am I supposed to do with them? And the answer in all cases is multiply them, Walter, and multiply them to the unique direction that the Lord has pointed you.
I have to opine here, and I'll get back to Walter in a second. So many churches that exist are about hundreds and thousands of people giving their time and money to follow the vision of one man. And indeed, whatever his calling or his mission is in life, let's see if I can enlist a whole bunch of people that will help me make my dreams come true. This is a damnable offense because the job of the church, it's written for us in the Bible, the job of gifted ministers, so says Ephesians 4, is to equip people for the works of service. And if I can put that in different words, it means to give you the tools to execute on the thing that God made you to do. So that's another way of saying what you just said. We're here to help put into your lap, the listener, put into your lap every tool that you would need so that you can run your home according to God's giftedness in you and the vision that he gives to you and to your wife. That's why we exist. Not so that you will follow our thing and go make our dreams come true, but that you'll go follow your thing and make God's dreams come true in you. That's what we want. Trent and Walter actually need the same thing in the long run, which is they need a spiritual understanding about where they're going, married with the knowledge and discipline to run finances the way they're supposed to be so that this vision comes to light.
Yeah, that's why we exist. And if I was starting with Walter, you're going to get all the tips and tricks here when it comes to specific tactics, and we can go deep on budget and we can go into investing mix and even questions like, well, I have a 401k at work. Which options should I pick? You can find all of that if you go back through Abraham's Wallet episodes, but it all points to this one thing that we've said. If you're not building something that's uniquely what the Lord has put in you and your family, then what's the point? Like, what are we doing? Are we just aiming at, you know, being able to play golf three times a week when we're done with our 9 to 5? I don't think that's very exciting. We don't get excited about it. So I would start there. And I really think that the course, Stephen, that you have that walks people through a step-by-step family vision statement is an excellent first step for that person. I might not give it to Trent. I might tell Trent, like, let's just start with some basic money tips because we got to make sure the train stays on the tracks. But with Walter, who goes, well, I've kind of got the baby steps done, I think a family vision and going through that exercise is an excellent entree into the very, very deep end of the pool that is multi-generational vision for wealth and all five capitals.
Sweet. Well,
the time has come for you to decide what the price of that sucker is going to be for the Walters of the world that are on the edge of their seats going, well, I hope he says the right price because I am a man with a budget and I'm not spending more than I got.
Okay, well, Trent has, because of different players in the league, he's become very excited about the Dallas Mavericks. And his favorite player isn't, you know, a starter, not one of the stars of the team. You know who he likes? That athletic and gritty Derek Jones Jr.
Oh, I was going to say PJ Washington.
Oh, PJ Washington, what's not to like? But
Dante Exum, an emblem of perseverance who was out of the league for 3 years and suddenly comes back and makes an impact on the hottest team in the league right now.
Wonderful story.
We've lost them all now. Let's get to the price.
For Trent's sake, and because he loves Derek Jones Jr., we're going to make it $55.
All right.
And that is a significant savings, if you didn't pick up on that. If you go to Outpost Academy and you use the code word Derek, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, you will find that the price is going to be $55 for you.
I have one more question. We've really gotten into this course. I did not expect us to even mention the course when we started recording this. But
nor did I.
Isn't the course one of the perks that we have historically provided to those who support Abraham's Wallet?
It is, without question, one of the ways that we say thank you to our supporters, yes.
Not a requirement at all, but for those who would be interested in supporting Abraham's Wallet, you know, at a pretty small level, like, you could almost support us for not too much more than that $55 a year, and we would kick in access not only to this Family Vision course, but also other things. Like access to the video room where we all goof around and video at each other and sometimes talk about serious things too.
He's right, everybody. He's right. Good call. See you next time. Go Mavs.